Good morning and hello again. Today, waiting for the text so it can be translated into 23 languages, as the DUP says no. We'll be talking to Bertie Ahern, MPs Hilary Benn and Andrew Bridgen, as the clock ticks down to the summit. How a mountain of paperwork is deterring applications for school principal jobs. New questions about how effective statins are in staving off heart disease. Cash for Ash, new insights into the scandal that brought down the Northern Executive. Dismissed as a Presbyterian elder for marrying another man, we talked to Stephen Smirl. And what would today's youngsters make of tales from Irish folklore collected by school children in the 1930s? Email today at sawar@rte.ie. Text us on 51551. And you can also tweet at today. SOR. Well, as we know, the Brexit deal remains on a knife edge as EU leaders meet in Brussels today following a frenetic 48 hours of briefings, counter-briefings, negotiation and speculation. EU and UK negotiators have reportedly agreed on two complex formulae on how both customs and consent will be managed in a post-Brexit future, but the DUP has said this morning that as things stand, the party cannot support it. We have a number of guests giving us a perspective from Dublin, London, Belfast and Brussels. Later I'll be speaking to Bertie Ahern, former Taoiseach and Fianna Fáil leader, and Andrew Bridgen, Conservative MP. Also we'll be talking to Hilary Benn, British Labour Party MP for Leeds Central, and we'll be talking to Sam McBride, political editor of the Belfast newsletter. First of all to you, Andrew Bridgen, how big a setback do you think is this morning's statement from the DUP that as of now they cannot support what's emerging in the talks?
Well, I think that puts a lot of pressure on the European Union to move their position to what will be a tolerable deal for the DUP. Under the Good Friday Agreement, anything that changes the status of Northern Ireland's relationship with the rest of the UK needs the consent of both communities. And for a Conservative and Unionist member of the House of Commons here, such as myself and many colleagues, if the DUP cannot support whatever deal the Prime Minister brings back, that makes it much harder for us to support it, unfortunately.
But as of now, I mean, are you prepared, from what you know about and what you've heard in briefings, are you prepared to back the deal as it's shaping up?
Sean, I am not saying whether I'm going to back or not back a deal that I haven't read the detail of. I haven't even seen the heads of terms. I leave that sort of irresponsible behaviour to Jeremy Corbyn and Joe Swinson, who've obviously already declared that they're going to vote against the deal before they've even seen it.
But I'm looking at, for instance, a quote in the Telegraph this morning, the Daily Telegraph, from Steve Baker, the chairman of the pro-Brexit European Research Group, the ERG, saying, "Great progress has been made in talks with Number 10. We have made great progress in our discussions. Really, at this point, it just remains to wish the Prime Minister every possible success as he goes to negotiate for our country." Now, that would suggest that the Prime Minister has the wind at his back from the particular strand of the Tory party that you belong to.
Well, he does. We all wish him the best, and I think everybody wants to see a tolerable deal come forward. What I'll be particularly looking for in the political declaration is that we're actually the end state of our relationship with the European Union after we've left. The future relationship will be that of a free trade agreement, a very comprehensive free trade agreement, the best in class. That would be, you know, for that, I'm willing to suck up quite a lot in the withdrawal agreement that I don't like. However, it is coming back to the point of the Good Friday Agreement. It has to have the consent of both communities, and if the DUP aren't on board, I would say that sends a message to the European Union that they need to move their stance so that we can get this deal. This will be in the interests of both parties across the line.
Are you talking about a consent of both communities to the initiation of this agreement, or to them remaining in it after a period of 2 or 4 years, or whenever a decision has to be taken?
Well, I believe in democracy, and I think, you know, people have the right to change their mind, and also things will develop as we leave, after we've left the European Union. Our economy will move probably in a different direction. Things change, and people should be allowed to change their mind about the structure affecting Northern Ireland. At the end of the day, Northern Ireland will remain part of the United Kingdom, not part of the European Union. They're leaving with us.
But are you saying that there effectively has to be a veto for the DUP on this ship even leaving port, so to speak, this agreement that's emerging between the European Union and the UK?
I think it's going to be very difficult for the Prime Minister to get a deal across the line unless he's got the DUP on board, for the reasons I've already explained. It's the ball's in the EU's court. They say they want a deal. Well, let's have a pragmatic deal that we can tolerate, and then we can move forward. If we don't, and I've briefed the representatives of European embassies this week, where we'll go, if we're forced into an extension, I think we're heading for a general election, everyone knows that, by next May. I really think that you're pushing the Conservative Party to a position where we'll be standing on a manifesto of, we've tried our best, we can't get a deal, it's no more negotiation, we're going for no deal. And that will squeeze the Brexit Party out of the polls over here, and we'll win a handsome majority. And the EU need to know that. That's where they're pushing us.
Hilary Benn, good morning. Say with us if you can, Andrew. Hilary Benn, good morning to you.
Good morning.
What's your read of the situation this morning? Clearly, there's trouble in the Tory-DUP relationship, but how do you read and what's your view of the deal as it's emerging from what we know?
Well, clearly, all of the focus has been on the Northern Ireland backstop, and it looks as if it's going to take a different form to what was previously in the agreement. Everyone is of the same view. We need to maintain the open border, and my reservations have never been about a withdrawal agreement, because I support an effective, workable backstop which guarantees the peace, prosperity and progress that has been brought to Northern Ireland as a result of the Belfast Good Friday Agreement. However, we have yet to see the legal text. We have yet, crucially, to see the revised political declaration, because there are two parts, as you know, to this. And the second part is where the two parties set out what kind of future economic and political relationship they intend to have. And my opposition to what the Prime Minister is proposing is that he said he wants a free trade agreement like Canada. Now, the government's own assessment shows that it would be the second worst outcome for the British economy after a no-deal Brexit, to which I'm very strongly opposed. It would result in customs checks and rules of origin checks and standard checks and so on. And you saw last week representatives of five great British success stories, pharmaceuticals, chemicals, aerospace, wrote to Stephen Barclay and Michael Gove and said, look, we think this would be very damaging for the future of our businesses and industries. And thus far, there's been almost no focus on the real consequences of Brexit, which is what is the future relationship going to be? And all of the focus, for understandable reasons, has been on can the backstop be renegotiated?
Now, would you be prepared, for instance, to support a deal or a draft agreement, if that's what emerges over the next 48 hours in Brussels? Maybe if Boris Johnson was to offer a confirmatory referendum on it?
Yes, I would. Because I think that is now the compromise position in British politics. Because we have, on the one hand, the Prime Minister saying, if I don't get a deal, we're going to leave with no deal. Parliament has made it quite clear that it does not agree with that. That's why the Act was passed, that if the Prime Minister doesn't get a deal, agreed by Parliament on Saturday, he must apply for an extension. On the other hand, you have those arguing, including the Liberal Democrats, who say if we won an election, we would, in effect, cancel the referendum result, because that's what revocation of Article 50 would mean. And in the middle is the view first set out by my good colleagues Peter Carr and Phil Wilson a year ago, when they said to Theresa May, look, we don't like your deal, but we are prepared to see it go through, provided you put it to the British people. And I think the question is this. Now we know what Brexit may look like, because if there's a deal, people can read it and see what it says about the withdrawal arrangement, but crucially, what it says about the future economic and political relationship. And there are so many things to be negotiated. Trade, customs, and what's going to happen to our services sector, foreign policy, security, scientific cooperation, standards bodies, and so on.
Indeed.
And, you know, when people talk about getting Brexit done, it's very misleading, because all that an agreement will do is to end the first phase. The Brexit process really hasn't started, because all of that negotiation about what will replace If in the end we leave what we've had for the last 45 years, well, that is going to take a very long time.
Indeed. Andrew Bridgen, could you envisage circumstances where, in order to get the deal through the Commons, that Boris Johnson would agree to a referendum on it, whatever he agrees with Brussels now?
No, I don't. I think a second referendum, which, let's not beat around the bush, the people who want a second referendum want no Brexit. That would undermine every simple majority vote that we ever have. People would always say, well, we could always have another vote until we
But if it's a good deal, surely you should have confidence in Boris Johnson's capacity to persuade the people to support it.
Well, what I think we need is a general election. And what you've got now is a Labour Party running scared of the electorate because they're well behind in the polls. You've got Prime Minister Boris Johnson zooming up in public opinion, and that makes a general election even less likely because the shenanigans of the Labour Party and members such as Hilary Benn, who we're hearing now, they are only going to drive the Labour polling figures lower and make
Boris
a general
Johnson,
election less likely.
If Boris's standing is doing so well, Andrew, why wouldn't he campaign in an election on the basis of the agreement as opposed to the basis that you would want him to fight on, which would be a no-deal withdrawal?
Well, because we've already had a referendum. The referendum was 1.3 million votes majority to leave. This would be the only referendum, the biggest political exercise in the history of our country, and we haven't actually affected that result yet. If Hilary Benn wants to start a campaign to rejoin the European Union or anybody else after we've left, that's fine. That's democracy. But we need to implement the decision of 2016, which we haven't done yet. We don't need a second referendum. We need a general election.
Hilary Benn, the act which carries your name, because you're the one who initiated it, requires, as you've explained just a few minutes ago, that Boris Johnson seek an extension if he hasn't got an agreement beyond the 31st of October. So how long can you keep putting off an election?
Well, I don't think we can keep putting this off in terms of resolving the first phase of the Brexit process, which is why there's a growing number of MPs who do support confirmatory referendum. And I think it's a perfectly reasonable point that you just made. If those who campaigned for Brexit are confident that the deal that Boris Johnson has negotiated, if that's what emerges, is a kind of Brexit that they're very, very happy with, then presumably they would have confidence that the British people would vote for it and we would leave on that basis with that deal. I suppose, Andrew was talking a moment ago about whether people in Northern Ireland have a right to change their mind. And I think he raises a very important and interesting question. And therefore, does that argument also apply to the people of the United Kingdom when it comes to Brexit? Now, I'm not arguing for a confirmatory referendum because I know what the outcome would be. It is perfectly possible that the British people would say, we've looked at Boris Johnson's deal, we still want to leave, we want to leave on that basis, and that is the end of the matter. On the other hand, they might decide a different result. If the British people have changed their mind and on reflection decide they want to remain, what exactly is the argument for continuing to leave if it turns out the British people have changed their mind? And the only way to find that out, because I don't know the answer, and Andrew doesn't, and the Prime Minister doesn't, the only way to find that out and to bring this to a conclusion, that's the other argument for it, if Parliament remains deadlocked, if Parliament continues to be unable to approve an agreement, we can't keep delaying. I accept that entirely. And at that point, it seems to me that us as MPs, we've got to face up to our responsibility and find the one mechanism that is available to us, which is to get a decision and to go back to the people and say, this is where we've got to. What do you want to do?
OK, we leave it there with you, Hilary Benn and Andrew Bridgen. Thank you both indeed for joining us. Bertie Hearn, you've been listening to them and you've been reading the various reports. Nobody has more experience, I think, than you have, or certainly in this state, of dealing with the DUP. How do you read the situation this morning?
Well, I see their difficulty, but it's the last day, and I think there are a number of difficulties today, Sean. And I think the biggest one is you're asking the ambassadors of the European Union who met last night, were expecting a full legal text, didn't get one, to advise the member states of what the position is. Now they haven't been able to do that. So the heads of state meet in a few hours' time, 2 o'clock. they don't have a legal text and they don't have a final agreement in front of them. And they always said they wouldn't get into that negotiation position. Now, I've always felt the opposite. I always felt that it would come down to the last European Council. I might have been a year wrong. I said it was the Halloween party last year. It seems to be the pre-Halloween party this year. But I think if they don't deal with it over the next few days and if they don't get an agreement, then you go into the House of Commons and you can see the division between Andrew and Hillary. That's going to continue into to Saturday's debate. Now, it's very interesting. I noticed Hillary is moving now to what I always believed would happen, the second stage of what's going to happen in trying to do a new trade deal. But just go back to the DUP position, John. A week ago, they were faced with a position that Theresa May's meaningful vote, number three, was beaten. The Boris went to a meeting with the Taoiseach with a new arrangement that it would, the customs union in Northern Ireland, they would leave the customs union of the United Kingdom but stay aligned to the European Union one. That was the kind of agreement that he was trying. He realised that that would still create an island of Ireland border, so he moved away from that. To his credit, I think that was the significance of the summit a week ago. He said, no, we're not going down that road. Then he moved to effectively back to the 2017 position. He moved back to the December 2017 position, which was a good agreement for us. So he's back very, very close. We haven't seen the text, but all of the leaks from Tony Connolly and your colleagues and from what's been coming through in other stations seems to be it's very, very close to the December 2017 agreement. The DUP that morning, as you recall, they put down their boot and said, no, we're not dealing with that. And it was the phone calls with 2 hours to go, and they said, stop. That's exactly what's happened at 7 o'clock this morning. So we're right back at that pre-Christmas meeting of 2017. And in fairness to the DUP, for probably the same reasons, I don't agree with them, but it's for the same reasons. So they're being asked to go back very close. I'm sure Theresa May is either crying or laughing this morning, but it's very, very close to that position. And they're saying the same thing today as they said now almost 2 years ago, that economically and constitutionally they don't like this. Constitutionally, because they see this as pushing them into a pathway that could be a united Ireland eventually. Economically, because they don't like the idea that the customs union is going to be aligned to the European Union. So that there lies the problem, and to see what Boris can now do in the next 2 hours.
Yeah, and on the consent question, they seem to be using the formula that's there in the Good Friday Agreement, which means that effectively you'd have to get cross-community support in advance of any deal actually getting underway or being signed off on. So in other words, they effectively, as indeed would Sinn Féin, as things stand now, have a veto over whether the whole thing starts at all.
Yeah, well, I think there's a bit of confusion here. If I can, 60 seconds just to explain it. The consent issue has become the big issue, but it's a misnomer, as consent in the Good Friday Agreement context refers to the right of the people of the island of Ireland, north and south, to bring about a united Ireland if the Secretary of State believes that the circumstances have changed and if they wish. Accepting that this right must be achieved and exercised with and subject to agreement consent of the majority of people in Northern Ireland. That is what the consent principle in the Good Friday Agreement means. The petition of concern, which is a different thing. A petition of concern came in simultaneously with the Good Friday Agreement, and a petition of concern can make it harder for new laws to be approved, as it triggers a requirement that the proposed legislation can only be introduced with cross-community support. And of course, you need 30 votes, and the only one that has 30 votes is the DUP. I'm using the word veto, but obviously if it's 30, and only one person is 30, then people will call it a veto. But I think we're mixing up two issues. The petition of concern, it was for a different reason.
Yeah, but they want to apply, do they not, the petition of concern principle to what's emerging, this EU-UK agreement, if there is to be one.
And I don't agree with the logic of that, because it's a different issue. I mean, the withdrawal agreement has to stand on its own merits. I mean, the Northern Ireland Protocol is going to have to state it's going to have to deal with the VAT issue, it's going to have to deal with the customs issue. I don't think the withdrawal agreement isn't coming in front of the executive in Northern Ireland or the assembly in Northern Ireland. So I think there are two different things, and I think the consent principle shouldn't be applied
right,
to that.
Right, but they've been in and out of 10 Downing Street now.
Four times this week.
Exactly, for an hour and a half on each occasion. Leading one source, quoted in the Financial Times this morning, is describing them as a bloody nightmare to deal with. But again, that's one way of looking at it. Another is that they are the master negotiators.
Yeah, I mean, I was through St. Andrews Agreement for it must have been the better part of a year with the DUP, and it was always up down. They will play it to the end, as the Northern parties always do. But what is the issue? I think the issue with them is that they are finding themselves having thought since they made that stand in December 2017, that they're being pushed back now, 22 months later, to almost the same position. And that's what they don't like. And I think they were prepared to make concessions. They probably felt they did make a concession before.
On the single market
and the goods. Mm-hmm. They felt, and that was, in fairness to them, that was a significant move, which would be very helpful in the overall context. But now they're finding themselves leaving the customs union. That's what they're being told, leaving the customs union, but being aligned to the EU customs union. So, I mean, you're really on top of a pin. If I tell you you're leaving something, and then I tell you, but when you leave, by the way, you're following exactly the same rules as the thing you left. Now, that's not a great card. So that's what they're being asked to do.
Yeah, it's a philosophical contradiction.
I'm just trying to explain their position rather than saying I'm agreeing with or disagreeing with it.
I want to come back to you about one or two more points. We're going to be joined by Sam McBride from the newsletter shortly. But look, to go to Brussels now for a quick update from Seán Murray of Euronews. Seán, what's the feeling there? Optimistic, pessimistic, or is anything actually happening?
Yeah, I think people were, disappointed but not surprised at the DUP's intervention this morning. And there's a feeling, really, that they've reached the limits of what they can move on, specifically in relation to customs, first of all, obviously, because the EU will say that it has moved on this customs partnership offer that the UK put on the table, which they weren't going to do a few days ago. But they'll do it because it's only for Northern Ireland. And although the single market can still be vulnerable, it'll be much easier to manage than if it was the UK customs partnership that Theresa May had instigated. On the issue of consent, I was speaking to a few people in relation to the negotiations on that. There was a feeling that Bertie Ahern is the expert there, but that the cross-community consent applies only to devolved matters in the Good Friday Agreement, so that for Brexit, it didn't matter to apply to devolved matters. Brexit wasn't a devolved matter, essentially, and that cross-community consent shouldn't be part of the consent mechanism in this deal. And then on the VAT issue is, I think, still quite outstanding. But yes, I think really the spokesperson just said there a few minutes ago from the EU as well on the consent issue that it would probably be down to Dublin and London possibly to negotiate between themselves. I mean, the EU has a vast array of other issues to discuss, and there is like a feeling, we've said this so many times before, that Brexit is taking up so much important time that it's basically causing a paralysis within Brussels, and it's also an exiting member state. I'll just add one more thing as well, that there is a hope on the customs issue that eventually with the free trade agreement you'd have zero tariffs from GB to Northern Ireland and zero tariffs then Northern Ireland to the Irish state, i.e. the EU, and that would deal with customs as well, because you'd have obviously less checks.
Okay, well, look, we'll let you away. Sean O'Reilly, Europe correspondent with Euronews, thank you. As I say, I'm joined now in studio as well by Sam McBride, political editor of the Belfast Newsletter. Sam, you're here to talk primarily, and we will do so later in a few minutes, about your new book about the Cash for Ash scandal. But how are you reading it? I mean, what is going to satisfy the DUP?
First of all, I think that their statement this morning is actually much more cautious than some people are reading it to be. This is not the full-throated denunciation that you would expect from the DUP if they were about to walk out of negotiations. This is a stalling position. This is trying to buy some time, I think. Now, some people might say there is no time, so don't be ridiculous. So there could be all
they're
sorts
saying,
of...
They're saying, as of now, we're not in a position to support the deal on the three headings, yeah.
Exactly, and they're not mentioning their one red line. That's not being mentioned anymore because, as Bertie Ahern has alluded to, it's been breached. They have accepted regulatory divergence. So once you've crossed that principle as they presented it, it's much easier to cross other principles or to negotiate around the margins of that. So I read their statement this morning as really being open to negotiation about this. Some people will cynically say that's about money. It's probably about more than money. And I think this question about the petition of concern, whether they can veto it, is very, very important because if you remember the last week when they accepted, and sorry, maybe it was the week before, I've forgotten now, but when they accepted this principle of regulatory divergence, that Northern Ireland would remain aligned with the single market, and as Bertie Ahern has explained, that really seems to be a bit of a nonsense, to be honest, but that was the fig leaf that really they had to get them over that hump. What they used to justify that was by saying, we would have a veto in the Assembly, and the implication of that was, we'll still veto it, so nothing has changed. It was a bit of an illogical position, because on the one hand, they were saying we've made a big compromise. On the other hand, they were saying we haven't moved an inch. So if they're now in a situation where they don't even have that fig leaf of a veto, I mean, they're in a very, very sticky wicket, I think.
Yeah, and is the sense that what's emerging is whatever role or voice the Assembly will have, it'll be down the road as opposed to at the start?
Yes, and I think there is a very fundamental question here, which everyone, I think, who has followed Northern Ireland politics will understand. Northern Ireland is not a majoritarian state. So yes, there are these questions about, is it a devolved matter? Is it a reserved matter for Westminster? Should that be put to the people? But the idea that you simply have a referendum in Northern Ireland or a majority vote, once you cross that line, it's very, very difficult. Since the 1970s, there has been pretty widespread acceptance across society in Northern Ireland that it is not a suitable society for that in which to operate. I think one of the difficulties for unionism here is that at that point unionism resisted. That unionism has always been more sceptical about that, understandably, because they were the majority. But I think if you're in a situation here where for the first time they think actually this could be in unionism's favour to have the petition of concern and then it's taken away, I think that's enormously damaging to unionist support for the entire idea of power sharing and the agreement.
I'm just being told, yes, I'm looking at Tony Connolly tweeting in the last 48 seconds, a deal has been done. Now, that suggests the deal is between London and Brussels, obviously. They've solved the VAT problem, which was one that was hanging over them. But we're waiting to see if the DUP have signed up.
Yeah, and I think the since this morning, I think what Sam is saying is since this morning, I'm sure, the British Prime Minister has been in touch with the DUP trying to sign off the last bits. I don't think the VAT is a technical issue, so I can't imagine it'd be around that. I assume it's around what the consent and the DUP correctly argued that Northern Ireland need a say in changes that happen. So it's what will be the wording of that will be very interesting, and I'm sure that's the last bit that, if it is agreed, are the DUP on side for that. I think the important thing, Sean, is that really they're up against the wire, because if the leaders start arriving as they normally do an hour or two in advance and they don't have the document, I think the summit could get into a mess. So I think they'll be very anxious to beat 11 or 12 o'clock.
Tony Connolly, good morning. You're tweeting a deal has been done. Tell us more.
Yes, Sean, a deal has been done. There is a text which has been concluded, and we're expecting a statement from Michel Barnier in the next while. But this is extremely important because leaders are arriving, and as of 5 minutes ago, they still hadn't got a text to look at. So a text has now been concluded. All of the outstanding issues on VAT, consent, customs, everything now appears to have been concluded. But of course, we don't know for sure that the EUP are fully satisfied and on board. But from the Brussels perspective, a deal has been done.
So do we know, have the DUP agreed to it, or is this basically London-Brussels business?
Well, that's the nature of these negotiations. It's a team of British negotiators with a mandate from the number 10 Downing Street and EU negotiators with a mandate from the member states. So this one presumes has got over the line on the basis that Downing Street is happy with it. By extension, one assumes that the DUP must be on board. But again, we've had scenarios in the past where the DUP haven't been on board. So we just have to wait to see how this plays out now in the next while.
And what about the feeling, Tony, that the European Union side wanted Boris Johnson to show them that he could get this through the Commons before they would agree to something? Where are we on that?
Well, I mean, I suppose in politics, especially with the House of Commons, you can't necessarily guarantee in advance that House of Commons will support the deal. But clearly, Boris Johnson must have conveyed sufficient assurances to the EU side that this deal would get over the House of Commons line. But again, that's a fairly perilous prediction to make, as we know, and there will be plenty of forces ranged against this deal over the coming days. And then, of course, everything will hinge on the vote on Saturday. But as from the Brussels perspective, a deal has been done, and EU leaders can now, and their teams and their lawyers can actually start to look at the text to see what exactly it involves.
And the translators as well. Tony, thank you very much indeed for joining us with that breaking news from Brussels. Not for the first time have you been first with it. Bertie Ahern, what do you make of it now?
Well, it would look as if Boris has had 3 hours to try and deal with Arlene and Nigel. So, assumingly, they've come up with something they've agreed on, but we'll know that. It'll be a very, very big call, I think, for the DUP to effectively end a European Council meeting on that issue. I know they've other business. I'd be surprised if they do that. So I presume they've got something that has, and as Sam said earlier on, they weren't belligerent this morning in that statement. So hopefully that it will now move very quickly to see what happens in the Commons. I think, listening to everything that the RG have been saying in the last few days, that they're on side. So it'll be a tight vote, and if the DUP are on side. The interesting thing on Saturday now, it'll be the amendment that tries to add on a referendum. That will be, I think, if everything else is agreed, that will be the tight vote.
And could you see that actually happening? Could you see the numbers there for that?
It could. Remember, it was quite close that the last time. But I noticed Hilary Bent this morning, and you gave him the opportunity to talk about the agreement. I think he was assuming there would be an agreement, and he had straight away moved totally to the second part of the negotiations, which is the whole trade agreement.
This is really the end of the beginning.
The trade agreement is going to be, I know your listeners will hate to hear this, it's a wonder one station has decided to have a non-Brexit news. I don't think RT are going to do that. But
don't be encouraging our listeners.
But I do think the trade deal is going to be, you know, really a monster, and I'm afraid probably people might get their Christmas, but when that starts for this country, because there are all kind of cliff edges that will arise in the trade deal, and Hilary Bent this morning I think has decided already, which shows that's the way Labour is moving into the trade deal. So I think probably things will go reasonably well on Saturday, I think, for the Prime Minister.
Okay, we leave it there for now. Bertie Ahern, former Taoiseach and former leader of Fianna Fáil, thank you so much indeed. And Sam McBride will be back with us a little later. Right now, though, we'll be taking a short break.
Tweet at Today SOR.
Well, there's been quite a flurry of reporting now from London and Brussels and elsewhere. I see Boris Johnson saying, we've got a great new Brexit deal. Let's just see. And Mr. Juncker, the President of the European Union, saying a deal is done. Same story from Laura Koonsberg, same tweet from the political editor of the BBC. As I say, that quote from Boris Johnson, we've got a great new Brexit deal. Tommy Gorman joins us, our Northern editor from Belfast. Are the DUP on board, Tommy?
Well, according to their spokesman 90 seconds ago, it's news to them, Sean. they have not signed up. They still have their reservations. That's according to their spokesman 90 seconds ago. And consistently throughout this, any information I have received from them, they've been pretty much on message between the people they have back at base in Northern Ireland and the three or four people who are in and out of Downing Street. So it would seem that, I suppose, all the printing of what the EU thought was a treaty that they had agreed with the UK, that would be printed up, that would be ready for distribution at the summit. Otherwise, you'd have a situation where if the Colley-Backey factor and the different factors that the DUP would be taking into account in terms of their base, if the Europeans were just had run out of patience in attempting to accommodate those, Boris Johnson included, and if their decision was they were going to press ahead and say this is the deal and hope that at some stage the DUP would say, oh yes, that's the deal we agree to, that seems to be the strategy, rather than face Boris Johnson with the embarrassment of going in and the matter not being discussed at all at, I suppose, what would be a big showpiece summit for him. So it would seem, Sean, that they're going to push ahead, maybe try and retrofit DUP support for it, or else that Boris Johnson may come back on Saturday and put what he feels is a deal to the House of Commons in Westminster before it for a vote, and see what the DUP do at that stage. But I can tell you 100% that some 3 minutes ago now, when I checked with the DUP whether they had changed their stance this morning and signed up to this, the answer was no, and that was on the record.
Just looking at the Boris Johnson Twitter feed, 2 hours ago he was tweeting, we are going to get Brexit done, leave October the 31st, and then in the last 6 minutes he says, we've got a great new deal that takes back control. Now Parliament should get Brexit done on Saturday so we can move on to other priorities like the cost of living, the NHS, violent crime and our environment. So, I mean, if the DUP, Tommy, are saying that, it would raise big questions as to whether Boris Johnson can get this through Parliament.
Well, look, Sean, look at the logistics that would be involved in this. People would be taking flights, for instance, as I understand it, the Taoiseach and his party, they're already in the air. There would have been an attitude, I'd say, in government buildings in Dublin before they left, that whatever you say nothing. This is an internal UK matter. Don't get involved in it. It might get sorted out while we're in the air or soon after we get to Brussels. And that would have been the stance that the Irish government was taking. But the DUP, you know, I got notice of that statement around 6:47, 6:48 this morning. They issued their release, I think, a few minutes later. And I've been in contact with them off and on during the morning. Now, the way they're operating at the moment, their party leader, Arlene Foster, their deputy leader, Nigel Dodds, their chief executive, Timmy Johnson, have been the people doing most of the in and outing of Downing Street. I'd say they worked through the night. Should we accept this? Should we accept that? I'd say they had sight of some texts. They raised the reservations they had about the practical workings of that, about, say, some of the customs union material, and also about the consent mechanism that was in place. One of the questions, this is quite technical in some ways, but in other ways it's quite simple. They had a concern that if there was an exemption and a rebate facility to be given to, say, businesses in Northern Ireland, would that then come under EU state aid rules? That in theory it would seem to be an advantage, but in practice, because of the state aid rules of the European Union, that it might turn out to be a worthless advantage. So they had concerns about matters like that. They were also very conscious, Sean, that this is our one chance. And I'm sure they were looking to have what we might call the Christmas stockings factor. They were looking to get as much as they could on other questions, like, say, if they had issues over the amount of funding that might be available for a future assembly, they were looking to nail down those matters as well. So that's the mode they were in right up to this morning. But Boris Johnson, on the other hand, was packing his bags. He was getting ready to go to Brussels. And obviously, he ran out of time for his discussions with the DUP. He's ploughing ahead. The Europeans had their arrangements made. They had 27 governments gathering. They had a treaty that had to be circulated to ambassadors. And I'd say they found the very idea that a small group like the DUP was having such a hold over the British government, I'd say they were perplexed by that and by some of the technical issues that were being raised in terms of VAT rebates and special status for this and that. And I'd just say they said, look, there's a bigger show to be carried out here. And they have decided to press ahead. Otherwise, you would have had this absolutely appalling spectacle of Boris Johnson arriving in there and no discussions to take place about Brexit because the thing hadn't been nailed down. So I think they're pretty much saying to Boris Johnson, if you have an issue with the DUP, that's internal British politics, you go and sort it out. We have maxed out in terms of our negotiations. We have completed our negotiations. And good luck to you, whatever business you have in Westminster on Saturday.
It's high wire. It's fascinating. Tommy, thank you indeed for those insights. That's our Northern editor, Tommy Gorman. And looking at the Twitter feed of Peter Foster, he's the Europe editor of the Daily Telegraph, saying that the DUP is having its face pushed hard up against the glass by this deal. And he makes the point that, as he can see it, the fundamental issue is not VAT, but the consent mechanism. The DUP had an effective veto in the original Johnson plan. Now they have lost it in the complex consent mechanism that has been designed by negotiators. The point is that no one gets a veto in the new arrangement, not Brussels, not Dublin, not nationalists, and no, not the unionist either. Dublin has made a big move on this, but the DUP fear is that it never really gives them a shot at exiting the arrangement. Sam, would you agree with that, Sam McBride?
I would absolutely agree with that. I think the key element here is having a veto. It's not good enough from the DUP's point of view to be able to sell it, to say we've got a say, we're going to be consulted. Unless they can stop this, it's not a sellable proposal from their point of view. But of course, from the European Union's point of view, how on earth can you have a situation that Stormont, this tiny legislature, this devolved legislature, can hold up regulations, for instance, across the entire EU? I mean, it's preposterous. So either way, it's very difficult.
Listen to Today with Sean O'Rourke with the RTE Radio Player.
And I'm just looking at a screen, TV screen in front of me, with a very happy looking Michel Barnier speaking about that deal which has been agreed. The tired, drawn look has gone from him. He's looking quite pleased with himself. I did suggest we might go to him live, but I gather he's speaking in French for the moment. So we'll hear from him later when he lapses into English, as it were. But Mairead McGuinness is on the line, Vice President of the European Parliament and MEP for Midlands Northwest. Mairead McGuinness, there must be immense relief that the deal has been done, but there's a long way still to go to get it over the line, certainly in London.
Yeah, I think that sums it up exactly. Relief and then just a big question mark. And I'm glad we're not on camera because I think I'm more tired and worn out than the faces of Michel Barnier and Jean-Claude Juncker. This is a long time in the making. We this morning weren't clear about the VAT issue, how it would be resolved, and we're trying to get details of how they actually resolved that. And I'll try and bring them to ASAP. But then we had the DUP statement, and that threw some cold water on everything. But the DUP remained committed to voting against. So our next question is, does Boris Johnson have the numbers so that he doesn't need the DUP? And just on the VAT issue, EU law on VAT will apply in Northern Ireland. The UK will be responsible for collecting VAT and excise and special treatment for some goods, etc. So that was a difficult one. That was before the DUP statement. I met some of my colleagues who are with the negotiators, and there is now pressure on the European Parliament to ratify next week. I thought that highly unlikely. I'm now being told that we may be in that scenario where we will be asked to do it, but it depends on what happens, if anything happens in the House of Commons on Saturday. So our timetable would be Monday, a special meeting of Constitution Affairs Committee that I sit on, and then a discussion, debate, and on Thursday, a vote. But of course, we will be waiting and watching to see the numbers in the House of Commons. And I suppose one of the things that struck me yesterday when I met Dominic Grieve and other MPs across party who are not in favour of Brexit, there seems to be one possibility that some might vote for a deal if they get the option of a confirmatory referendum. But again, these are things which might evolve in the conversation over the next few days.
Yes, indeed. An hour ago, Mairead, we spoke to Hilary Benn of the British Labour Party, and he was quite emphatic to the point of, I think, enthusiasm in saying and confirming that if there was a referendum going along with this, yes, he would support it in the Commons.
Yes, that was a clear message that I got from the colleagues in the House of Commons yesterday. The question about Labour and the intention of Labour Party, Labour MPs rather, we're not clear there. I know the leader of the Labour Party has urged them to vote against. Whether they will break rank, I'm not entirely sure. So I imagine now the focus, while the attention is Brussels and today's council meeting, it also will be back at the numbers game in the House of Commons. And I'm fascinated, I suppose, to see what situation the DUP will be in, if they will maintain, as they have thus far, their opposition to this deal, what impact that will have on the ERG group within the Conservative Party. Perhaps Boris Johnson has done the numbers, has talked to people, one doesn't know. We didn't think we would be quite in this place where it now almost is being rushed at the last moment to get a deal through by the end of October. But I'd also a little bit of caution here with some colleagues in the Parliament from other political groups, other member states. They will want to look at the detail and be very clear that they're happy to vote this through.
I was going to put that to you, Ashley Mairead McGuinness. Is there an assumption that the EU 27, as they will be when Britain goes, the other 27 leaders will effectively let this through on the nod, as it were, now that the legal text is landing?
I would imagine that all of them have been kept up to date with the evolution of the negotiations. So they're not going to walk into a meeting and say, oh, so this is the detail. They will know what the general direction of travel was in terms of the negotiations. So it won't come as a surprise to them. But I imagine there will be conversations around it. So they will question how it will be implemented, what the impacts on the single market. I would be more suggesting that MEPs here in the European Parliament, colleagues, that they will want to have a very close look at this. First it goes through committee and then through the plenary, possibly on Thursday, with the change of our agenda. I mean, if all of that happens, it will be breakneck speed at the end after a long and weary process. But I think all of us, and we're probably wise to do this, are not jumping any fences, because we've been here before and the numbers in the House of Commons just didn't work out. Maybe it will be different this time. I'm just wondering, though, will politicians, opposition politicians in the UK be willing to allow Boris Johnson have the sitting on Saturday and have it done and dusted by Saturday evening? It does seem like undue haste in the sense of a major treaty, but they may well do that.
Let's go to somebody with insight into the answer to that very question. John Rentoul, a political columnist with The Independent in London, is on the line. John, how do you read the situation there? Has Boris Johnson got the numbers?
No, I don't think he has. I think he needs the DUP. If he doesn't have the DUP, I don't think he can get it through the House of Commons. So I don't know what he's playing at here, because you don't, you don't bounce the DUP into something like this. They won't respond well to that kind of treatment. So if they're not on board, then I think he is heading for Theresa May to the power of 10, because she tried exactly the same thing. She tried to get a deal through without the support of the DUP and failed, and she is no longer Prime Minister.
Yeah, but you wanted to come back in on that one, Mairead?
Yeah, I'm just listening to that and I'm wondering, because I see somebody else suggesting this on Twitter, that maybe this is a plan to get an election, not a ratification.
Yes, that could be the plan, but it's a strange way to go about it, isn't it?
Matt Carthy is a Sinn Féin MEP. He's also on the line. How are you reading this agreement, Matt Carthy? Do you think it protects Irish interests from what you've been able to discern from it?
Well, we are literally just reading it right now, Sean, so nobody is going to give a full and reasoned judgment until we have the absolute details of everything that's in. I suppose to be clear about this, and we're actually meeting with representatives from border communities against Brexit who represent those people on both sides of the border who were always at the coalface of this Brexit debate later on. And to them, I guess, and to myself as somebody who comes from the border region, this was always about minimising the damage that Brexit would do. There's no suggestion that the deal that is has been agreed or reached is going to ensure that we have everything continuing the way it was previously. There are going to be challenges presented, whatever the deal is. What we hope is that the text of this deal will minimise those complications and challenges to such an extent that we can move forward in some semblance of progressivity. At the same time, of course, the need to have the bigger constitutional debate is going to continue, but we may be in a position to continue that debate in a planned and managed way, as opposed to the catastrophic manner in which that would need to take place in the event of a no-deal Brexit scenario. So the answer to your question is we don't fully know everything that's included in this deal. We have a fair idea, but the issues pertaining to VAT, for example, some of the issues in relation to the political machinations for ratification of future arrangements remain unanswered. But to us, this is always about minimising the negative implications of Brexit that will continue to be there, and we hope that the progress that was reached in the talks are sufficient enough to ensure that those challenges will be minimised.
Philippe Lambert, a Belgian MEP and member of the European Parliament Steering Group on the Brexit negotiations, joins us as well. Good morning to you, Mr. Lambert.
Good morning.
Tell me about your response to this agreement. Are you satisfied that it protects the European Union and protects the single market, obviously, and protects the Good Friday Agreement?
Well, I have to take the word of all negotiators for that, but as far as I am concerned, I tend to trust them. So we have just received the text of the agreement, and we are going to check that, of course. But I know that Michel Barnier and the whole team have negotiated with the best interests of the Union in mind. So I have no reason to believe that they have been lax on this.
Yes, but I suppose the big question now is, it's one thing for Boris Johnson to have signed up to this legal text, another matter completely as to whether he can actually deliver the votes for it in the House of Commons.
Exactly, and so he's now at the same point as where Theresa May was, so he has an agreement with the Europeans, and he has to prove that he has a majority for that, and frankly I have my doubts about that, and I have had them all along, so I don't know.
And would you have a suspicion then about a question mark about his sincerity then in making this agreement, or where does it leave you?
No, frankly up until very recently I thought that Boris Johnson didn't want the deal. So obviously he has stared into the no-deal abyss and he didn't like what he saw. But then again, his starting point is worse than Theresa May's, in the sense that at least Theresa May had a nominal majority in the House of Commons. What is certain is that Boris Johnson doesn't have one. And in order to have one, he would need to secure DUP in the first place. He would need to reclaim the 21 MPs whom he kicked out of his party a few weeks ago. And he would need, on top of that, to convince a few dozen MPs from the opposition. And given the way he has been offensive to the House of Commons in the last few weeks, I believe that he has a real challenge on his hands.
To come back to you, John Rantoul, it would appear on the face of it that perhaps one of his only sure ways of getting those votes that Philippe Lambert has taken us through would be to offer a confirmatory referendum. Now, could you see him remotely even agreeing to that?
It's possible, but I mean, that's not a way of getting the deal through. I mean, a referendum is the opposite of a deal. The referendum is designed to keep us in the European Union and to stop Brexit. So that would be a desperate measure by Boris Johnson. I think he would rather go for an election. But of course, he is in a minority in a hung parliament, and he can't even guarantee that he's got the votes for a general election, because, I mean, whatever Labour say about wanting an election, they're not going to vote for one if they think they're going to lose it.
Yes, but then the question arises, if he is fighting an election and this and a deal hasn't gone through, what does he campaign on in an election? Is it on the basis of this deal, or is it on the basis of a no-deal Brexit?
No, I think it would have to be on the basis of this deal, possibly promising to amend it with the threat of walking away, with the threat of a no-deal Brexit. I mean, his message in the election campaign would be, let's get Brexit done, which allows him to sell the possibility of a no-deal Brexit to those who want to have that leverage. But you know, anything can happen in general elections, and it's not really a very sure way of getting what you want. But it looks as if all routes are blocked for him now.
Yes, and the question is, I mean, how could he possibly campaign on the basis of this deal and at the same time hope to get ahead and dispose of the Brexit party led by Mr. Farage?
Well, indeed, I think that would be a problem because he would have gone back on his word to get us out by the end of October. I mean, it would be very interesting to see what attitude the Brexit party take towards this deal, but if the DUP remain opposed to it, then it's very easy for Nigel Farage to say that it's not a good deal on unionist grounds. I mean, he can say that it'll break up the United Kingdom and it concedes too much to the EU. So all roads ahead look extremely difficult for Boris Johnson at this moment.
And coming back to you, Philippe Lambert, MEP, if by some means that none of us can actually see as of now, late on Thursday morning, Boris Johnson somehow gets approval for this in the Commons on Saturday, is there sufficient time to actually have the arrangements put in place to allow for Brexit to happen by the end of October?
No, I don't think so. So anyway, you will need a technical extension, if only to get the job done. But then again, this is all predicated on the idea that that Boris Johnson would have a majority, and I have yet to see this. And indeed, subjecting basically the approval to a confirmatory referendum may be a way to have a majority. And I am not. My starting point is not that the outcome of such a referendum would be to reverse Brexit. It is a possibility, but it's not certain, but at least it would give real legitimacy to whatever outcome there would be. That is, if basically it's the people either confirming their wish for the country to leave the European Union, but then on the terms agreed with the European Union, or it would be indeed to remain in the European Union, all things considered. And I think that the two options would be possible. And personally, as a Democrat, I would accept both.
Okay, well, look, thank you very much indeed for joining us online. That's Philippe Lambert, a Belgian MEP and member of the European Parliament's Brexit steering group. I see Jeremy Corbyn now saying that the deal is worse than Theresa May's. He's the leader of the Labour Party in the UK, as we know. Let's hear now from Michel Barnier, the European Union's chief negotiator, speaking in English.
Discussions over the past days have at times been difficult. But we have delivered, and we have delivered together. The solution that we found rests on four main elements. Number one, Northern Ireland will remain aligned to a limited set of EU rules, notably related to goods. This means that all applicable procedures on goods will take place at the points of entry into Northern Ireland and not across the island. For this purpose, UK authorities will be in charge of applying the Union's customs code in Northern Ireland. Number two, beyond applicable procedures, there is also the question of customs duties. Northern Ireland will remain in the UK's customs territory. It will therefore benefit from the UK's future trade policy. But Northern Ireland will also remain an entry point into our single market. So, what have we done to square this circle? UK authorities can apply UK tariffs on products coming from third countries so long as those goods entering Northern Ireland are not at risk of entering our single market. However, for goods at risk of entering the single market, UK authorities will apply the EU's tariffs. Number three, this night and this morning also, we were working on the issue of VAT. It is an important subject, to avoid distortion of competition within the single market for good. On this point also, we have managed to achieve two objectives: maintain the integrity of the single market, but also satisfy the UK's legitimate wishes. And finally, number four, Prime Minister Johnson and the Taoiseach wanted to ensure long-term democratic support for the application by UK authorities of relevant union rules in Northern Ireland. 4 years after the entry into force of the protocol, the elected representatives of Northern Ireland will be able to decide by simple majority whether to continue applying relevant union rules in Northern Ireland or not. This democratic support is a cornerstone of our newly agreed approach. Why? Because this newly agreed protocol is no longer to be replaced by a subsequent agreement between the EU and the UK. So it makes sense to ensure consent.
It makes sense to ensure consent. And just on that latter point, Mr. Barney making the point that the Taoiseach and Prime Minister Johnson want to ensure that 4 years after entering into force, the elected representatives will decide by simple majority if they want to continue with the European rules. So no veto in advance, and it's a simple majority that will decide after 4 years. Lisa Chambers is Fianna Fáil Brexit spokesperson. She's on the line, as is Brendan Howland, leader of the Labour Party. Lisa Chambers, what do you make of what's been emerging so far today?
Yeah, I mean, just at the outset to say I'm genuinely relieved that between the UK government and the EU, they have managed to reach agreement and they've got a deal that we hope, with the next few steps to go, that we hope can avoid a no-deal Brexit. You know, I think we've been hearing reports, we've all been glued to our phones the last couple of days as to what the deal might look like. So we've had some idea what the sticking points were, and consent was one of them and remains to be one of them. And it's deeply disappointing to see the DUP are saying no to this deal and that they're sticking their heels in. I think it's unreasonable that they would request a veto for one community over the other. And I think the consent mechanism that's there, that allows for the entirety of the Assembly with a simple majority, that's democratic. And that allows the people of Northern Ireland to have a genuine say as to how this operates every four years.
And so, what about their claim that this is rewriting the Good Friday Agreement?
I think the Good Friday Agreement is a standalone treaty, and this withdrawal treaty that's been negotiated will also be a standalone treaty. It must stand on its own merits. It must stand on its own two feet. So they are distinct and separate, and they must pay respect to one another. But I think that the DUP are confusing the two elements. And when you consider that Northern Ireland, the majority of people in Northern Ireland voted to remain, the DUP have ignored that mandate. The suggestion that one community would have a veto over the other is not reasonable. And I think we need to move away from that in Northern Ireland, this sectarian headcount, this unionist versus nationalist. That's not in the interests of the future development of Northern Ireland. And what's on offer here is a special arrangement for Northern Ireland that will actually benefit the North economically and will actually benefit its people. And I wish the DUP would look at that. And I've no doubt that the farming community and the business community, from the unionists' perspective, will be conveying that message to the DUP, I'm sure, and I'm sure they've been doing it. But we're not over the line yet. Boris Johnson still needs to get the numbers in the House of Commons. We don't know if we have that. That is a matter for the UK government. And all we can do is wait and see what happens there. But at least there is a deal negotiated between the two parties that are negotiating, namely the UK government and the EU. We're not over the line yet. The deal is not ratified, but we're certainly in a far better place than we were even 48 hours ago. And, you know, to come from a position of genuine hopelessness where we didn't think there'd be a deal, to a position where we now have a deal on the table that could avoid a no-deal, disastrous Brexit for everybody, I think is a positive. But I would still exercise a degree of caution. We're not there yet. We still need to do domestic preparations to make sure that we are ready in the event that this deal does not get ratified.
Brendan Howland, leader of the Labour Party, is on the line as well. I just see the latest is Boris Johnson saying MPs will vote on this deal on Saturday. But can you see any way of it getting through the Commons?
I think it's going to be difficult. I'm just, like Lisa, delighted that a deal is going to be available to be presented to the Commons on Saturday. I am in Brussels. I met with the Michel Barnier and his team this morning, and 2 hours ago this was not done. Boris Johnson hadn't agreed, so I think we all held our breath until we got to this point. Now, I suppose, it's back into the domestic court of Britain. I'm going in now to a socialist leaders' meeting, which will include Jeremy Corbyn, and I'll be able to talk to him directly in relation to the British Labour Party's view. So we'll see what happens.
Well, Jeremy Corbyn was completely opposed to the Theresa May deal. He says this one is even worse. I mean, would you, as an Irish Labour Party leader and fellow socialist, try to persuade him to support it?
Well, I will. The issue for Jeremy Corbyn is actually the political declaration, and that is an issue for the 19 Labour MPs who have indicated in the past their willingness to support a deal, because Boris Johnson, unlike Theresa May, has determined that his long-term objective, indeed medium-term objective, is to move the UK away from the standards in terms of environmental standards and labour law standards, working rights and so workers' rights and so on that the union, the European Union, has. That is very problematic for any Labour Party, because certainly I don't think anybody in the British Labour Party will want to see Britain move to a Singapore-type situation where they're going to be in competition with the European Union on the basis of lesser work standards, lesser environmental standards. That would not be good for anybody in the longer term. Obviously, we have been in a very focused way looking at the issues on the island of Ireland. I'm, from an Irish perspective, hoping the deal can be done, but I fully understand the difficulty that presents to my British colleagues. That's the sort of discussion we're going to be having the next hour.
Okay, a lot that remains to be seen. Brendan Howland, leader of the Labour Party, Lisa Chambers, Fianna Fáil spokesperson on Brexit. Thank you both indeed. And we leave the last word on this one to Sir Winston Churchill, speaking in February 1922. The whole map of Europe has been changed, but as the deluge subsides and the waters fall short, we see the dreary steeples of Fermanagh and Tyrone emerging once again.
Tweet at Today SOR.
And back to the main story of the day. I'm rejoined now by our Northern editor, Tommy Gorman. Tommy, a breakthrough in the negotiations between the European Union and the UK, but the DUP holding out.
Yeah, obviously, Sean, power politics kicked in. Probably the last summit with Jean-Claude Juncker in his role as President of the European Commission. All the member state delegations making their preparations to travel. The treaty documents, the new provisions, all typed up, ready to be circulated to the 27 different delegations. Meanwhile, back in London, Boris Johnson was having trouble with the 10 MPs who supported what was a minority government in Theresa May's time. There was the history of Theresa May being pulled out of negotiations before when the DUP had objections. And obviously, Boris Johnson and Dominic Cummings said, "We have business to do." They left London, they've headed to Brussels, and the agenda is not going to have a big hole in it. The business of the agreement between the United Kingdom and the European Union will be completed, and then Boris Johnson will have to return to deal with the consequences domestically in Westminster.
Tommy, just looking at some of the analysis and the reports overnight, it seems to have been very, very fraught, certainly the night before last, between Arlene Foster and Boris Johnson. There is no sugarcoating in Downing Street of what happened, said one person close to the talks. It did not go well, and they described the DUP as a bloody nightmare, and they were fearful that Arlene Foster would say something that would really upset the apple cart completely coming out of that meeting, but in fact she just walked by the media and kept her own counsel. So you were saying earlier that they are still in negotiating mode, but is there much they can get at this stage?
Sean, they can attempt to retrofit. They can attempt to tidy up some of the outstanding matters. And I wouldn't say at European level you'd have huge objections to that. They can also seek to get domestic measures in place I suppose, provisions that Boris Johnson's government could and would make in a heartbeat. But I point one area where they've got real difficulties, and the background to it is fascinating. I see in the details that are just published that the decision to stick by this arrangement that's being put in place, that will be taken by a simple majority. Now, bear in mind, Arlene Foster was quite clever in the language she was using. She was talking about collegiality that will apply in the new dispensation when we get Stormont up and running. And I believe, as a devolutionist and watching her over the years, I believe that she would like to follow that philosophy. But Nigel Dodds then came out when he was under pressure over, you know, what was seen as a compromise in the border down the Irish Sea in relation to regulatory alignment. And he said, we will still have a veto. Then what happened? The new Secretary of State for Northern Ireland said no one party will have a veto. And here you have in black and white confirmed that it won't be cross-community votes, majority of nationalists, majority of unionists. It will be by simple majority.
And Tommy... Now
That's very, very different. That's difficult for the DUP. It's logical to Europeans, Sean.
Yes, and logical to Boris Johnson, because it would appear again from reports that he had this conversation with the Taoiseach yesterday, a brief enough phone call during which he secured the Taoiseach's agreement that a simple majority would be sufficient, and that brought the situation forward.
Well, I'd say it wasn't that he secured the Taoiseach's agreement. I'd say the Taoiseach secured his agreement, because if Boris Johnson was looking to get some flexibility into matters, he would be attempting to maybe roll back towards the DUP because he was trying to woo them. The Taoiseach was very firm in relation to this, and it is a change in, say, the Good Friday Agreement mentality, where you had that provision within the Good Friday Agreement. But like, the people who were looking to use the Good Friday Agreement were the DUP, who didn't subscribe to the Good Friday Agreement.
Tommy, can you see them being brought back on side?
Well, look, Sean, Boris Johnson needs numbers. But Boris Johnson, I'd say, is going to get such a bounce from this that he would be quite prepared to be defeated in Parliament, by the DUP included, go to a general election, make his case, take into account the weakness or otherwise of Jeremy Corbyn, and gamble on coming back with a proper majority, with or without the DUP.
And the Brexit Party.
That's right. And I think the question for the DUP is, you know, are they prepared to stay out of things, or do they want to compromise on this? And another point I think really worth making, Sean, from an Irish perspective, relationship with our nearest neighbour has been repaired. Leo Varadkar made his call at the right time, took an initiative. There will be no hard border on the island of Ireland as a result of this, great certainty. And some of the doom and gloom that was influencing Pascal Donoghue's budget may not have to apply. So it's a good day for Leo Varadkar.
Tommy, thanks indeed for that analysis. Indeed, Michel Barnier giving special thanks to Leo Varadkar. He decided to meet in Liverpool a few days ago, and it was from that meeting that we knew we could make headway. We leave it there. The main news, obviously, at noon on this Thursday. A deal on Brexit has been agreed between the EU and the UK negotiating teams ahead of a European summit. The DUP has again voiced its opposition. That's our lot for today. Thank you for listening. The programme produced by Deirdre Neeline, broadcast coordinator Andrew Dupuyer. Mark McGrath was on sound. Amy Ryan on research. Over to Ronan.